Okay, so we are holding on Lamed Aleph Beis, just about the middle of the wide line. The line begins Lahu L'Rabbanan. We're holding at the end of that line.
Lamed Amud Beis.
Lamed Amud Beis, about halfway down the wide lines. The line begins Lahu L'Rabbanan, about 20 lines from the bottom or so. Okay, here 18 lines from the bottom to be exact. I forgot to mention, by the way, this morning, a very interesting thing in connection with this business about that we said that David had passed away and his body is lying over there, and Shlomo is asking what to do as far as moving it, and the Chachamim tell him that he would have to take a piece of bread, you'd have to take a loaf of bread or a child and carry it together with the body. And an interesting point on that I forgot to mention. The Magen Avraham, now the Mordechai, one of the great Rishonim, says that this whole concept that you can't move a body on Shabbos only applies if the body is not dressed in clothes. Or the Alter Rebbe adds also if it's in Tachrichim, because then the Tachrichim are bottled to it, and you can't say that you can move it on the basis of that. But if the body is dressed in clothes, then you would be allowed to move it because the clothes aren't mukta, and therefore you can carry the body together with the clothes. So the Magen Avraham brings an obvious question from the Shalach Kaddish. In that case, in this story over here, David HaMelech obviously was wearing clothes because he said he was in the middle of learning Torah when he went out, and the Malach HaMavis made the noise in the trees, etc. So why do we need a loaf of bread or a child in order to be able to carry him? So the Magen Avraham gives an answer. He says because David was a king, and a king's clothes are not to be used by anybody else. Out of respect for the king's clothes are not allowed to be used by any civilian. Usually, in fact, they would burn them at his funeral as a sign of honor to him. So therefore, then the clothes are also b'hana. So therefore, the body's not there. Therefore, you can't carry them. Therefore, it's not. Therefore, they're not. You don't have. You can't use them to avoid the problem of muktzah. So Achronim asks on that, okay, but another king is allowed to wear them. Shlomo would be allowed to wear them, so they're still not muktzah. He'd still be able to carry the body agad then. So they give a different answer, which is that we said that David fell down, as the step broke underneath him, and he fell down and passed away. Therefore, what it means is that now the din is if a person dies Rahman al-Islam from a fall like that, where then a lot of blood gets absorbed into the clothing, then you do bury the clothing with them because then it absorbed enough of their blood that blood needs to be buried also. So even if it's clothes that another king could wear, but in this case, since he fell down,
spending it in.
Yeah, no, we had just started. I was just saying an interesting point from the Gemara that we learned this morning about David HaMelech's body, why it is that they couldn't carry it together with the clothes that were on it, and that should be good enough. So one reason is because the clothes are also b'hana to anybody other than another king, and another reason we were just saying is because he fell down and passed away, so that means a lot of blood was absorbed into the clothing, and in that case, the din is the clothing needs to be buried with him. All right, so now let's start the Gemara. Again, we're in the middle. We're on Lamed Aleph Beis in the middle of the wide line. The line begins Lahu L'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, "Af Sefer Mishlei Bichshu Lignayz." Now we said on Amud Aleph that the Chachamim at one point thought to hide away Sefer Kehelas because they said there's a problem. There are things in Kehelas that seem to contradict each other, and therefore people are going to read Sefer Kehelas and come to wrong conclusions about what's valid according to Torah and what's not. And he said they found that there's Torah at the beginning and Torah at the end. And they said, in that case, there must be Torah in the middle as well, and we can reconcile all the things. So the Gemara says, "Ask Sefer Mishlei Bichshu Lignayz." In a similar vein, one time the Chachamim thought to hide away Sefer Mishlei and remove that from circulation because of the same thing, because of the same problem. Show your Dvar of Sosim Zazdeh, because there are things in Mishlei that contradict each other. So why didn't they hide it away? Now, Mishlei, unlike Kehelet, you can't say you have Divrei Torah at the beginning and Divrei Torah at the end. There's no specific process that you can point to at the beginning and the end of Mishlei that talk about the importance of Torah. So therefore, so what do they decide after all that it says that it can be kept in circulation? Amri, because they said, Sefer Kehelet, lav ayninun v'ashtuchinun kaima. Look, with Sefer Kehelet, when we thought that you have all these contradictions in it, they were able to reconcile the contradictions. They were able to figure out how nothing of it contradicts each other, like we said before. So therefore, here also, let's look into it. Let's not be so quick to hide it away let's see if we can first figure out how to reconcile these contradictions in it, and then if we can't, then we'll deal with that. Okay. So where do you have a My Daughter of Persians essay? What do you have in Kehelas, things that contradict each other? So like this, you have a posik in there, Siv Alpan Silki Valde, one posik in Mishle, rather. One posik in Mishle says, don't answer a fool according to his foolishness, meaning that if a fool comes to you with a foolish statement, don't answer him back. And another posik says, it's actually the very next posik in Mishle, says, Anek Silki Valde, says, do answer a fool according to his foolishness. So what is it? Should you not answer him or should you answer him? That's what they said. There's a contradiction. But once they realize that there is a way to reconcile them and we shouldn't just hide away the book, we shouldn't just remove the book from circulation. But therefore, so like somebody's got a beeping over there if you can mute yourself if you don't mind. So the answer is like Kasha, Hobba Divrei Torah, Hobba Mili Da'alma. It depends whether the person is asking, whether the fool is asking you a question in Divrei Torah, then you should answer him according to his foolishness. Meaning, because otherwise, as the pasuk itself continues, that you have these two psukim, each one begins at one pasuk says, Al Tan Silki Valdei, and then the pasuk continues, Pen Tishvalei Gamata, don't answer the fool according to his foolishness, because you might be then acting like you're equal to him, like you're just on the same level as him. And on the other hand, the next one says, Anek Silki Valdei, answer the fool like his foolishness, Pen, and the prophet continues, Pen Kishvalei Gamata, Pen Yir Chacham Be'enav, otherwise he may consider himself wise in his own eyes, so when it comes to Divrei Torah, you have to answer him, because otherwise he's going to think, oh, look at that, I have a contradiction, I have a question that destroys the whole basis for the Torah. Therefore, you have to answer him. But if he's asking in Milaj Alma, if he's just asking in matters of worldly affairs, don't bother answering him. Don't lower yourself to his level. As in fact, we have an example, Ki Hoda Huda Osala Kameja Rebbe. There was an example of somebody who once came in front of Rebbe, Omole, and the guy says to Rebbe, Ishtecha Ishti, your wife is really my wife. In other words, you were Mizana with my wife, or Bonecha Bonai, and therefore the children that, or the other way around, I was Mizana with your wife, whatever, and therefore the children that you think are yours are really mine. Now, obviously, that's stupidity. The guy is Sam trying to drive Rebbe nuts. But instead of answering him, as we just said in Mili D'Alma, you don't answer the fool in order not to lower yourself to his level. In particular, Marashar explains that the point is the guy is trying to claim that Rebbe's family are Mamzerim. So therefore, if Rebbe answers him, then people are going to say, you know what, a person who answers somebody else, we have a general rule that a person always, when he's accusing somebody else, a person often, apostle person himself, accuses other people of his soul. Obviously, this guy himself is a mamzer. That's why he's accusing Rebbe's family of being mamzerim. The Rebbe figures, if I answer him back, then I'm going to be on the same level as him. Then people are going to say that I'm a mamzer as well. So instead of answering him directly, Amalei, Rebbe says to the guy, would you like to drink a cup of wine? So one explanation, actually, the Iyum Yaakov says that Rebbe is saying, it's as if Rebbe is saying, you know what, thank you for giving me that information. Here, let me honor you with a cup of wine in response to that. What happened? Shosa, the guy drank a cup of wine, Upaka, and he exploded, and that was the end of him, and therefore Rebbe didn't have to worry about his Mishagasim anymore. Another example, Ahuda also the Kameh de Rav Chia, another person came to Rav Chia, Amalei, and he says to him in a similar vein, Imcha Ishti, your mother is really my wife, so you think your mother is married to your father, but really she's married to me, and therefore, in other words, you are a mamzer, and you are my son. So in other words, in the previous one, the guy was accusing that in the previous one, the guy was accusing that Rebbe's children are mamzerim. This other guy is going beyond that and accusing that and claiming that Rav Chia himself is a mamzer. And again, Amalei returns to Shetishka Koistro Yayin. And again, Rav Chia does the same thing. He says, would you like to drink a cup of wine? Shasa, the guy drank the wine, or Paka, and he exploded, and that was the end of him, and Rav Chia didn't have to worry about him anymore. So you have examples like that where somebody is saying something in Mili D'Alma, in worldly matters, where instead of answering him, you deflect him, basically. You don't want to answer him again in order not to lower yourself to his level. And then, like, people are going to say, you're accusing him, therefore you're actually the mamzer. So instead, they just offer they offer them a cup of wine, like, to distract them, kind of, and therefore that's the end of him.
How can he explode from a cup of wine? What kind of...
Well, obviously it was Min HaShemayim. Obviously it was Min HaShemayim, but this way Rebbe and Rebchia will be rid of this guy. In fact, the Iyun Yaakov, I think it is, says something along the lines. The Gemara mentions in Yevamos a concept that a person who's not known to be a mamzer, a person who really is a mamzer but is not known to be, Hashem arranges that such a person won't live long, so he doesn't produce more mamzerim in the world. So therefore, once these people are coming and accusing Rebbe or Rebchia that their children or they themselves are mamzerim, then therefore, very soon after that, Hashem is going to arrange that they're going to die in order that they themselves don't produce more mamzerim in the world. So the Gemara points out, Amar Rav Chiya, so Rav Chiya said in this connection, look at this, the first guy with Rebbe only accused Rebbe's children of being mamzerim. This guy accused me myself. Rebbe's tefillah that he would say every day at the end of davening helped that he himself is not thought to be a son who's a mamzer. Meaning, in other words, as we said, that the guy accused that Rebbe's children are mamzerim, but not him himself. There's actually, Marashah points out, there's different girsois over here that maybe in Yaakov it says both stories happen with Rebbe. Or whatever. The Rebbe's tefillah helped that he himself was not claimed to be a mamzer. The Rebbe, Shabbat Masri, because we know when Rebbe would finish his davening, we learned this in Brachas, that he would say, we say this every morning in Brachas, may it be your will, Hashem, our God, that you save me today from brazen people, from chutzpah people, and from chutzpah. So azeponim means that people who are chutzpah shouldn't harm me. And azeponim, a mamzer is usually, an azeponim is usually a very chutzpah person. So Rebbe is constantly asking, every day, asking Hashem that people shouldn't call him mamzerim. And so that helped over here, that tefillah of his help, that in fact this person was not able to accomplish what he thought to be able to get Rebbe or his children claimed to be mamzerim. Okay. So those are examples, again, of where a person asks something in Mili De'Alma, which is not worth answering. So that's where the Pasuk in Mishlei is saying, don't descend to his level, don't answer him according to his foolishness. Okay.
When it says Azus Panim, can't mean he shouldn't have Azus Panim to other people too?
Well, of course it means that, but Rashi explains that it means also, that there doesn't come about me rumors that I am a mamzer, which a mamzer is an azponim. So yeah, of course it also has the meaning that he himself shouldn't be azponim towards others, but it also includes, therefore, that he shouldn't be accused of being a mamzer and have it claimed that he's a mamzer who is an azponim. Okay. The divrei Torah maizi. Where do we have an example when it comes to Divrei Torah where you should answer the ksil, where you should answer the fool according to his foolishness? So you have an example. He had the Yosef Rav Gamliel v'Kadarish. Rav Gamliel one time was sitting and darshaning. In the future, in Mashiach's time, a woman will be able to give birth every day. As the Pasuk says, the pregnant woman and the woman who gives birth together. So in the context of the Pasuk, it means that the pregnant and the pregnant woman and the woman who gave birth together with everybody else will join when it comes to returning to Eretz Yisrael in Mashiach's times. But the way the Pasuk is phrasing it implies that there'll be at the same time a pregnant woman and a woman who gives birth, meaning that the woman can be pregnant with some babies, and meanwhile, Rashi explains, that doesn't mean, in other words, that pregnancies are only going to last one day, Rashi explains. Pregnancies are still going to take the same amount of time that they do now. But what it is unlike now, where generally speaking, once a woman is pregnant, she can't become pregnant with another baby. It would, in fact, even to Nida, could actually damage the first baby if she does. In Mashiach's times, she'll be more like the Gemara is going to say in a second, like a hen, like a chicken is nowadays, where she's fertilized once and then produces many and produces eggs every day. So that's what he says. That's going to be in Mashiach's time. Liglig all of Oisei Talmud, a certain Talmud laughed at Rav Gamliel. He said, "Oma ein kol chadash shachas haShemesh." What do you mean? There's nothing new under the sun. It says in the pasuk in Kehelas. So how could you say that there's going to be a new thing in Ma'aseh Bereishis, when Mashiach comes, so Rabbi Gamliel shows him, so here, because it's Divrei Torah, Rabbi Gamliel does answer him. He says, come, I'll show you an illustration of it in Olam Hazeh. I'll show you an example, even nowadays, Nafak Achle Leitana Golis, and he showed him, look at a chicken. That again, it can be, it has one clutch of eggs inside it, and meanwhile it gets fertilized and starts developing another clutch of eggs. So you see, in the same way that you already have a semblance of that concept nowadays, and the Moshe Mashiach, you'll have it by human beings as well. So there's an example of Anek Sil Kinivalta, even though the guy is talking and acting in a chutzpahdika way and laughing at Rabbi Gamliel, and that makes him a Sil, that makes him a fool. Nevertheless, Rabbi Gamliel takes the trouble to answer him in order that the words of Torah should be understood correctly, and the guy shouldn't have any more reason to laugh at him. The two Yosef Rabbi Gamliel of Kadarish, another time Rabbi Gamliel was sitting and darshaning, Asidim Ilonis Shemitzin Peres Vacholyon. In the future, in Mashiach's time, the trees will produce fruit every day. Shenema, you have a Pasuk in Yechezkel, the Nasa Onaf Va'asa Peri. The Pasuk says that the trees, in the Pasuk over there, it's a metaphor actually for Mashiach, who is for Malchus Beis David, and Mashiach will compare it to a tree, but it uses the metaphor of a tree, and it says it will produce it will grow branches and it will produce fruit. So we learn from that as a comparison. Ma onaf b'chol yom, just like a tree produces new little branches every day, a tree's branches are constantly growing. Af pri b'chol yom, the same thing. Limos Mashiach, a tree will produce a fruit every day. Again, liglig olav oisa talmid, a certain talmid, probably the same one, laughed at him. Alma v'aksid en kol chodesh tachas hashemesh. Doesn't the pasuk say there's nothing new under the sun? So how is there going to be a change in teva in Mashiach time? Amalei. So again, Rabbi Gamliel tells him, boy ba'arechol dugmosim ba'olam hazeh. Come, I'll show you an illustration where you have such a thing even nowadays in the world. Nafak achle leitzlas. And he went and showed him a tzlach plant, which, as we learned in Brachos, a tzlach plant is a little bush over there that produces fruit, it produces edible leaves and edible casings for the fruit and whatever, and it keeps on producing new ones every day. So there you have an example nowadays of one kind of tree or bush or whatever that produces fruit on a constant basis. Okay. The two Yosef Rav Gamliel, the Kodarish, another time Rav Gamliel was sitting and darshaning, Asida Eretz Yisrael Shetotzi Gulskoiz Oklei Melas, in the future of Mashiach's time, Eretz Yisrael will produce Gulskoiz, which means rolls of bread, ready-to-eat rolls, Oklei Melas, and silk or silk clothing or expensive clothing. Shenema Yehi Fisas Bar Ba'oret. As we find a pasuk in Tehillim, there will be a pisas bar in the land. The simple meaning of pisas bar means a large amount of grain. Bar means grain, like mishbar bar mitzrayim. But Rashi explains the word bar, yes, means grain, like mishbar bar, but it also means clean and like beautiful clothing, as a bara fachama, as clear and pure as the sun. As far as pisas, it has a double meaning. Again, the word pisas is related to the word pas, which means the palm of the hand, so rolls that will fit in the palm of the hand, that are wide and flat, like the palm of the hand, and also it means clothing, like sonis pasim. So we see from that passage that the ground is going to produce ready-to-eat food and clothes. Liglig olav oisei talmud, again, the same talmud laughed at him, v'alma en kol chodesh tachas hashemesh, there's nothing new under the sun, so what do you mean that the ground is going to produce ready-to-eat food and clothing, ready-to-eat rolls and clothing. So he said, come, I'll show you an illustration of it in this world. So he showed him, as far as the food, you have an example. As far as the rolls, you have an example where nowadays the earth produces mushrooms and truffles. And the top of a mushroom, the cap of a mushroom, first of all, they grow overnight. And the cap of a mushroom, which is one of them, which is part of the edible part of the mushroom, is wide and shaped. It is wide and rounded and shaped like a roll of bread. And as far as this that you're asking, that how could it be that the ground is going to be producing ready to wear clothing? So he showed him. He showed him Navra Bar Kura. You have the example when in a palm tree, you have the heart of the palm tree, which grows every, a new one grows every season, and you have, as we learned in Brachos, it's edible, and you make a shakol on it, or maybe nowadays you make a hadam or whatever. Around it, when it's young, there grows a kind of soft stuff, there grows a kind of soft material which is similar to clothing. So therefore, so you have there you have even now that the ground produces something that resembles clothing, something that resembles cloth, and the Austin Lava, all the trees will do that. Okay, so again, so those are examples of where we see that in Divrei Torah, you do answer the Ksil according to his foolishness, even though he's asking in a foolish and insulting way, nevertheless, you still answer him and explain the Torah to him properly.
Rabbi, in the Ksil, in the first case, Mila de Alma, he got punished when he was legally allowed, he didn't get punished.
That's true. And actually, Mephoshim points out there's a different Gemara in a different place where you also have something involving Rav Gamliel, where he gives a drasha about something that's going to be Limos and Mashiach, and somebody laughs at him and does get punished. The difference is, one of the explanations is, over there, that Talmud who made fun of him was not basing himself on any positive, he's just basing himself on, we don't see such things nowadays. We don't see such large jewels as such large diamonds or whatever as Rav Gamliel was talking about in this drasha over there. So therefore, he deserved to be punished. Whereas over here, okay, he was doing it in an insulting way, laughing, but he was, on the other hand, basing himself on a positive, so that gives him a little more leeway. So therefore, he didn't get punished. Okay. In this connection, speaking of answering people's questions, the Gemara says, Tonan Abonim, we learn in a Braisa, La'olam yehei odam in v'son kehilo, a person should always be humble like Hilo, la'al yehei kastam keshamai, a person should not be masked and particular about the covered like Shammai, as we'll see examples later on of where Shammai was masked and Hillel was not. But first, we're going to have a story where we see the degree of how humble Hillel was and how forgiving and how forbearing he was with people who were trying to drive him back. Maisa b'shnei b'nei adam, so the Gemara says, it happened once with two people, shehimu zeseh, they made a bet one with the other. Amru, the bet was, kol mi sheyelech v'yachnit tashilo, whichever one of us is able to go and get Hilo angry, yito dalav meis zuz is going to win 400 zuz. An interesting point over here, Tosfos briefly refers over here to a Gemara in Bava Metzia, that so what, they made a bet. Who says the guy is going to be able to collect on it lahalacha at all? And we're going to see at the end that the guy is very upset because he lost the bet. So obviously he is going to have to, he lost the 400 zuz that he otherwise would have definitely gotten. So Tosfos does just mentions over here, Tosfos refers to something in Bava Metzia where they explain that in order for it to work, in order for a bet to be chal, they would have had to make a kinyan. Okay, anyway, so they made a kinyan, let's say. So the deal was whichever one can get Hillel angry will win 400 zuz. Amar echad mehem aniyach nitenu, the one of them says, I'm sure to win the bet. I know how to make Hillel angry. So what did he do? Oysayem erev Shabbat, the day when he decided that he's going to be able to collect on his debt was erev Shabbat. The Hillel chofach et rosho, Hillel is washing his hair, the covered Shabbat. Holach ba'omer al pesach beisoy, so this guy goes and passes by in front of Hillel's house. Omar, and he starts yelling out, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Who over here is Hillel? Who over here is Hillel? Now, it's a very insulting thing. Like, what do you mean? You don't know who Hillel is? You don't know who Hillel is, that he's a Nasi and everything? You're acting as though, like, there's just, you know, I'm looking for some old person named Hillel? Well, Hillel wrapped himself up, he dressed himself properly, and he went out to greet him. He says to him very patiently, my son, what do you need? What are you asking for? So the guy says, I have a question now. So Hillel tells him, Shaal b'ni shaal, ask my son, ask. So the guy asks, why are the heads of people of Babel segalgalos? Rashi has two explanations. One is that Sgalgalos means that their heads are unusually long, front to back, like they're not round. A normal skull is more or less round front to back. Theirs are not. The other explanation is the other way around. It's more round than it should be. Anyway, the point is, either way, he's asking that their heads are misshapen. So first of all, it's a silly question to ask, especially on Erev Shabbos, when Hillel is in the middle of getting ready for Shabbos, and especially when he could have asked somebody else. But on top of that, also, there was an insult to Hillel in it, because Hillel himself was from Bavel. So it amounts to saying that Hillel himself is, his head is not shaped properly. So Hillel tells him, Bni, She'ela Gerla Sha'al. So he says, my son, you asked a very important question. The reason why their heads are misshapen, Mifnei She'en Lahem Chayas Pitchos, because in Bavel, they don't have expert midwives. The midwife, when the baby is born, one of the things she needs to do is shape the head properly, because it gets pushed out of shape when the baby is coming out of the birth canal. So the midwife has to kind of get it back into shape. And like this, the midwives over there aren't expert enough to know how to do that, therefore the heads end up shaped funny. Okay.
Doesn't that contradict what we just said a few minutes ago, that you don't answer a seal, you don't answer a stupid question?
So a number of the Mephoshim asked that question. So first of all, the Ian Yaakov says, okay, listen, you know, I mean, Hillel went the extra mile, that's what we're saying. Hillel, in the son, he wanted to, like this, if he doesn't answer even the question like this, then later on when the person has an important question, he's going to be afraid to ask. But with that said, Mao Shah and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, among others, talk about different explanations of that there may have been deeper things over here. Mao Shah has a long explanation where the gist of it is that the guy himself may have actually meant them as silly and irrelevant questions, but Hillel being honored and always trying to look out for the good side, he thought that maybe the person is actually asking what is the source of the fact that people, that we find that people from Bavel have a certain bad midah, that they're Bali Gaiba, which is represented by the misshapen head. And therefore he answers him in terms of that, he says, you should know, it's true. Unfortunately, there are people in Bavel who have round heads, who are Bali Gaiba. The reason is basically because they don't have the smart to realize that, you know what, let's not be so proud because we're rich, because after all, riches can disappear. They don't realize that, and therefore, unfortunately, they're Bali Gaiba. So Hillel, in other words, according to that, thought that there was an actual real question hiding behind them. Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a whole other explanation. He says that actually the question itself, besides that we said that it was an insult to Hillel, because Hillel himself comes from Bavel, it also has to do with he's asking that you, Hillel, in a certain sense, don't deserve to be nasi over the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, because like you have crooked heads compared to the Jews in Eretz Yisrael who have their heads on straight. You people from Bavel have your heads on crooked. And therefore, Hillel answers him according to that, that he says, I don't have it in front of me right now, but he gives an answer that they don't have chayes pitchos, they don't have people who are teaching them Torah properly, therefore you're right, not everybody in Bavel is capable of being one of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, but when they come to Eretz Yisrael and they learn Torah like I did, then they gain a great deal of Chachamim. Okay, so again, according to that also, in other words, Hillel thought, or maybe even the guy actually meant a deeper question, an actual question in Torah that's hiding behind this question about the shapes of the head. Okay.
What kind of deeper question?
So again, we just said, Marshall says that Hillel thought that there was a question about why people from Bavel are Bali Gaiva.
It's not a deep question.
You have the Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that there was a problem among many of the Jews of Bavel that they were Bali Gaiva. So according to that, the guy is asking, according to Marsha, the guy is asking on a deeper level, why is that so? And Hillel answers him. Or according to Yaakov Emden, he's saying, how is it that, you know, the Chachamim of Bavel, they don't learn Torah properly, so how is it that a Chacham from Bavel like you ends up being the Nasi and then the leader of and the teacher of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael? Anyway, okay, let's go on. Then the guy leaves. The guy goes, he waits another little while, another shah literally means an hour. I don't know if it necessarily means an hour, because we're still saying that Hillel had to wrap himself up. So it just means a certain amount of time, whatever. Again, he comes around calling out, is there a Hillel over here? So again, Hillel wrapped himself up in his proper clothing and went out to meet him. My son, what do you need? Again, the guy says, I have a question to ask. Ask, my son, ask. This time the guy asked, why are the eyes of people from Talmud trutas? Trutas, that he says, means like weak. Rashi actually has two explanations. One is that turtis means their eyes are weak, and another one is that their eyes are round. Most people's eye socket, not eye socket, but most people, if you look in the front of their eye, the way that their eyelids hang over the eye, it's elongated, it's oval kind of. In this case, they have this rounder than this rounder than normal. So why is that? And he answers him, he says, you asked a very important question. The reason is because these people live among the sand, and therefore, so the sand they live among the sand. Therefore, the wind blows sand into their eyes, and therefore, it makes their eyes weak. Or Rashi's second explanation, because they live in sandy places, therefore, Hashem made it that their eyes are shaped differently, so that way the sand is less likely to get into their eyes. So again, here also you have Marshall's explanation that Hillel thought the guy is asking about why it is that people from Talmud have ayin ra, they're cheap, they're stingy, and Hillel gives them a reason. According to Yaakov Emden, the question is why is it that people from Talmud are mamzerim, but doesn't that also mean that the Jews of Babel who live nearby maybe are also not so kosher in their yichus? And he answers him. By the way, yet another explanation I saw about all this, I think from Malach Chayev, he says, is that the guy was actually asking, again, another reason why Hillel thought it important to answer the guy is because, in effect, the guy was asking like this. Look, we say in Torah, Alpi Torah, we say that there was one man and one woman created, Adam and Chava, and from them descend all the people in the world. So the guy is saying, in effect, with his question, he's saying, I don't believe in that. If that's the case, why is it that you have people who live in one place, like in Babel, have differently shaped heads than everybody else? Why is it that the people in Talmud, for example, have different shaped eyes and everything else? So evidently, there must have been various original human beings, and the different people who live now come from those different ones. And therefore, Hillel has to answer him that no, it's not a genetic thing. It's not a genetic thing. It's something that Hashem made that people change, that people's looks and people's bodies, change according to the climate they live in, or according to what the midwives do, or whatever. But they all ultimately descend from the one couple, Adam and Chava. Okay. Anyway, the guy leaves. The holach the himdin shorachas. He goes and then he comes back a while. He waits a little while. Chaz of amam mikan hilo mikan hilo. Misapet biyotzei lekrosei. Again, Hillel wraps himself up and goes to greet him. Amalei bni ma'asim avakesh. My son, what are you looking for? Amalei she'elo yeshli rishal. I have a question. Amalei shal bni shal. And the third question is with name Maza Graham shalachrikiim rechavei. Why do the Africans have wide feet? And the answer is, why do the Africans, why do people who live in Africa have very wide feet?
Wide?
Wide. Yeah, their feet are wider than normal.
Feet, okay.
Yeah, well, why are their feet wider than normal? He says, my son, you ask a very important question. The reason is because they live in swampy areas. So here also, Rashi says, either it means, therefore Hashem made them with wider feet, so they're not so likely to sink into the swamps. Or the second explanation, Rashi says, that they don't wear shoes because they live among the swamps, and shoes would be useless in a climate like that. When a person wears shoes, it makes their foot narrower because the foot squeezes the shoe squeezes the foot a little bit into shape, as opposed to these people go around barefoot, therefore they have wider feet. Again, Marshaw says that it has to do with the question of Nefesh Rechava, the third bad meter that it mentions in Pirkei Avos among the Talmidim of Bilam, that why is it you have certain people are always looking to gather as much money as possible, and they're always greedy, and Hillel was giving him an answer. The guy is asking, how is it that you have the people of Babel and the people of various other places that went into Galus didn't bother returning to Eretz Yisrael when the second Beit Hamikdash was built? And Hillel gives him an answer. Okay. So now the guy says, so far it hasn't worked. Three times he tried to get Hillel angry and nothing doing. So now the guy says, I have many questions to ask. But I'm afraid you're going to get angry. So in response, Hillel wrapped himself up and sat down in front of him. Omalei says, no problem. Ask as many questions as you want. Amalei, so the guy asked the question, after who Hillel Shekoren Oikon Nasi Yisrael, are you Hillel who they call the Nasi of the Jewish people? Which is, it's also, first of all, an insult. What do you mean? You don't know who Hillel is? And also, what do you mean that they call you Nasi? Like, as if you don't really deserve to be Nasi, they just call you that. Amalei Hain, so Hillel says yes. Amalei, so the guy says, very insultingly, Im Atahu, if that is you, if you are actually the Hillel who is the Nasi of the Jewish people, Lo Yugo Kamos Chav Yisrael, may there not be more like you among the Jewish people. Amalei Bni Mikne Maase, Hillel has asked him, my son, and he's still calling him after all that, after all the insults, he's still calling him very nicely, very, very kindly, my son. Why? What's the matter? Amalei, so the guy says, I don't want there to be more like you. If they should bat the Al-Yabcha, Dalad Meir Suz, because of you, I lost 400 Suz, I lost the bet. Amalei, so Hillel tells him, Heve Zohar Beruchacha, be careful with your mind in the future. In other words, don't get involved in bets on things where you don't know how it's going to turn out. Kedai Hu Hillel, because you didn't know. Kedai Hu Hillel, Shetabed Al-Yodi, Dalad Meir Suz, you should know. Hillel is worthy. That you should lose 400 Zuz on his account, Zid Dalad Meir Suz, and even another 400 Zuz, because in effect, that's what the guy did. He thought he was going to win the bet, so he thought he was going to get 400 Zuz. Now instead, not only he doesn't have the 400 Zuz that he thought he was going to get, but now he's even losing 400 Zuz because he lost the bet to the other guy. As long as Hillel does not become angry, that's the most important thing. So we see from this story how humble Hillel was and how forbearing he was and how he was willing, even when you have a guy like that is trying to drive him crazy, that he's still willing to be patient with him. I once saw an explanation, by the way, on the Heve Zohar Beruchacha, which would mean be careful with your thoughts, which we were saying, meaning Marsha says, it means that be careful, don't get involved in such things in the future where you don't know how it's going to turn out. I once saw an explanation that it also means be careful with your spirit. In other words, the guy himself was becoming angry, as we just said. You know, he's saying to Hillel, I'm very upset because of you. I lost 400 votes. But like all this time, he's trying to get Hillel angry, and not only he didn't succeed, but he himself became angry. So Hillel's telling him, calm down and don't do that kind of thing in the future.
So who told the story? Was it Hillel, or was it that fellow, or were there Talmidim around?
Could be the fellow told the story. I don't know. Could be there were Talmidim around. I don't know. We don't know. We don't know who told the story.
Okay. Was he Jewish, this guy?
The Pashtus, yes, especially because, like I said, Tosfos is mentioning over here that you have to ask the question, on Pialocha, how is the guy obligated to pay up on his debt? And the answer is, elsewhere Tosfos says, because it was a king. If the guy was a goy, then it's neither here nor there. Anyway, let's go on. So now we mentioned before, on the other hand, we said that Shammai was much more picky on these kinds of things. Shammai was not as forbearing as Hillel. So let's talk about some stories about that. It happened once that a certain goy came in front of Shammai. Omalei, he says to Shammai, Kama Torah yesh lachem, how many Torahs do you Jewish people have? Omalei, so Shammai tells him, of course, Shnayim. We have two. Achas shebeksav, achas. We have a written Torah, and we have an oral Torah. Amalei, so the goy says to Shammai, Shebeksav ani ma'amincha, as far as the Torah Shebeksav, I can trust you, because fine, it's written in front of us, so I trust that when you teach me that way, because I want to become a ger, that you'll teach me it properly, because it's right there in front of me. But Shebal Peh, ani ma'amincha, but as far as the one Baal Peh, I don't believe you, I don't trust that it's going to be correct. I want you to convert me and make me a yid on condition that I'm only going to learn and follow Torah Shabbat. Because I can't accept that there's such a thing as a Torah Shabbat. Well, Shammai wasn't going to put up with that. Of course, there's no such thing. You can't have Torah Shabbat without Torah Shabbat. Goar boy, so Shammai yelled at him, and he made him leave with a rebuke. But on the other hand, the guy came to Hillel, Gaire, and Hillel, and the reason is, Rashi says, because that's the halacha. If a person comes and says, I want to be a ger, but I'm only going to accept certain parts of Yiddishkeit, no good. So Shammai is following exactly what the halacha says. On the other hand, when he came to Hillel, also Lechamed Hillel, on the other hand, he came to Hillel, Gaire, and Hillel was Megayer him. Now, how is Hillel Megayer him? What about the halacha we just said? Rashi says, because when a person is saying, I'm willing to accept the Torah except for a particular detail, it means he really doesn't believe in it. In this case, Hillel realized it's not the guy doesn't really believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. He just doesn't understand the importance of it. He doesn't understand. He doesn't realize that Torah Shabbat Peh also comes from Hashem, just like Torah Shabbat Sab. Hillel realized that I'm going to be able to teach him. I'm going to be able to explain to him, as we're going to see in a second, exactly what Torah Shabbat Peh is. And once he understands what it is, then he'll accept it as just as binding and just as much Min HaShemayim as Torah Shabbat Sab. And then he'll be a proper Ger. So therefore, Hillel was able to be the guy of him, knowing in advance that he's going to be able to accomplish that. So what did he do? Yoima Kama Omale Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet. So Hillel says, okay, we've got to start teaching you Aleph Beis. So he starts teaching him, he starts teaching him the letters of the Aleph Beis in order. L'mocher Apichlei, the next day, he switched them around. So for example, Rashi says, on the first day, he's teaching him the order of the Aleph Beis is Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet. And on the second day, he's teaching him the order is Tof Shin Reish Kuf. So the guy says, what do you mean? Yesterday you didn't teach me like that. So Hillel says, and you see that you have to rely on me just to know what letter is what and what the order of a letter is, and you rely on me for that. The same thing. When it comes to the Torah Shabbat Peh in general, you can rely on me that I'm going to be teaching it to you correctly. You have to realize that even when it comes to such a simple thing as learning the Aleph Beis, you're not able to learn it unless you accept that there's such a thing as a Torah Shabbat Peh. So the guy accepted that, and he became a proper Ger. Another time it happened with another guy who came in front of Shammai. He says, make me a ger on condition that you teach me the whole Torah while I'm standing on one foot. And besides, for the simple meaning, Marshall says there's another meaning that he meant in it also. He meant, as we're going to see, actually, that I want you to give me one basic principle that the whole Torah depends on. As we're going to say, that Hillel, in fact, did that. Dochboy ba'amat ha'binyan shebiyodei, Shammai pushed him away with the builder's measuring stick that he had in his hand. So he had a measuring stick in his hand. The Tashbeis, one of the late Achronim, talks about that we see from this Gemara that just like we find many Chachamim who worked at various jobs for a living. We know, for example, we learned in Brachas that Rabbi Yeshua was a smith. And we have, for example, that Hillel himself, we learn in Gemara and Yuma, when he was still poor, he used to chop wood, and many different Chachamim also worked for a living. So he says, we see from this Gemara maybe that Shammai was by profession a builder, and then besides that, of course, he spent as much of his time as possible learning Torah. Marsha says also the reason why he used a measuring stick is because he wanted to symbolize to the guy, listen, you think it's like you can, do you think, for example, if you're building a building, you're able to build a building standing on one pillar. A building like that is not going to be sturdy. You build a building, it has to have a big, strong foundation. The same thing, the Torah is not something that you can reduce just to one basic principle. The Torah is very wide and very broad, Aruka Me'eref Nida. Therefore, don't think that you can just bring it down to one principle. So that's why he uses a builder's measuring stick to push him away, as if to say, like, you realize that the Torah is like a building, and you can't build a building like that. The guy comes to Hillel, Gaire, and again, Hillel was Megayer him for the same reason as before. Amalai, and he tells him, okay, here's the one thing that you can learn on one foot. Da'aloch sani l'chavrach le'savid. Whatever is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. Zuhi kol ha'Torah kola. This is the entire Torah. The idach pirushu, the whole rest of the Torah is a pirush to it. Zil gmer, go and learn it. It's unfortunate, by the way, people, you know, this is one of the most well-known stories in all of Shas, of course, and you have many people like to just quote the part about Abbas Yisrael, about the Da'aloch Sani L'chavrach Le'Savid is the whole Torah, and they leave out this last part where Hillel tells them it's not just enough to realize that Zil Gmur, you actually have to go learn the rest of the Torah and understand that content. So what does it mean? In what way is this a summary of the whole Torah? So two possibilities, Rashi says. One is because we find a pasuk in Mishlei where Hashem is referred to metaphorically as your friend. So therefore, when we're saying what's hateful to your friend, don't do you yourself, what's hateful to you, don't do to your friend, that means you wouldn't like if your instructions are disregarded. So the same way, don't disregard Hashem's instructions. Treat Hashem in that sense like your friend, for example. So therefore includes the mitzvah, and of course it also includes the mitzvah, Beinonu Machaberet. Second of all, Rashi says, never mind that. Also, just even if you say that it just means your regular human friend, okay, most of the Torah involves mitzvot v'inyan machaber. We know, of course, in Perek Lamed Beis of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about a deeper idea of it. Now, when a person realizes that his neshama is the essential thing of him, and that all neshamas come, all Jewish neshamas come from the same source, then that automatically makes it that automatically puts him in a much better place as far as Ava and Yira of Hashem, because he realizes that the guf is not so important, and only the neshama and the Torah and mitzvot that he uses to feed and clothe the neshama are the important thing. Why is it, by the way, that Hillel uses the negative form, Da'aloch Sani L'chavrach L'Sabed? Why doesn't he say it in the positive form, V'yahas L'Recha Kamecha? There's a number of different explanations about it. One interesting one that they say, I think from the Kofsker, is because the guy is still a guy at this point. He can't comprehend what it really means, V'yahas L'Recha Kamecha. He's not capable of that yet. But to understand the negative, don't do something that you would tell somebody else, that you wouldn't want you to do unto yourself, that even a guy can understand. Okay. Onward. Shuv Maisa Benochriach. Then it happened with another guy. Shahoya over Achoda Beis Medrash. He was walking behind the Beis Medrash while kids were learning Torah inside. The Shamakel Sefer Shahoya Omer. He heard a teacher teaching the students. The Elab Godim Ashayasu Choshin the Ephod. He's teaching them about the Big Day Kahuna, about the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Omar, so the guy asked Halalu Lami, who were these clothes for that were saying that the Choshin and Ephod and so forth? Omar lo the Kohen Gadol. So they said, these are the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. So he decides, Omar, or he's a Nochri, Vatna. So the guy starts thinking to himself, Eilich, ve'es Gaia, v'shvil shi'isi money, Kohen Gadol. Okay, let me go and become a Ger. And then, in order that the Jewish people will appoint me as a Kohen Gadol, and then I'll be able to wear those beautiful clothing. Balitne Shammai, so he comes to Shammai, Omar le Gaireni Amunashi Kisimeni Kohen Gadol, and he tells Shammai, make me a Ger on condition that you, that I can eventually be made Kohen Gadol. Doch by Ba'amas Abinyan Shabiyada, and again, Shammai pushes him away with a measuring stick. And here, Marshal says also, same idea as the previous one. The guy apparently is under the impression that the whole Torah, that being a Kohen Gadol is the central thing of being a Yid, like one pillar that you try to build a whole building on. And Shammai is telling him metaphorically with the stick that no, you can't build a building that way. The building of Torah and Mitzvah is much greater and grander than that, and it needs a solid foundation, not just something like that. Baldus ne Hillel Gaire, he comes to Hillel, and Hillel is Megayer him, similar to what we said before, because Hillel knew in the end that he's going to be able to get him to realize properly. And here also, by the way, you have a din, Marshall points out, you have a din that you're not allowed to be Megayer a person when he says, I want to become a Ger because of wealth or power or whatever. And here, where he's saying, because I want to wear the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, wouldn't it be the same kind of thing? So here, Marshall says that maybe Gaire doesn't mean that he actually was Megayer him, it just means he's starting to get him ready to be a Ger. He's not actually doing the Mila and Tvila yet. He's just going to start the process of teaching him Torah. Almost, it says, listen, when they appoint a king, they only appoint a person as king if he knows how a king is supposed to act. You want to eventually be a Kohen Gadol, then you have to learn the laws. You have to learn the relevant laws of what's involved in being a king or a Kohen Gadol. Okay. Holach Bekorah. So the guy is going and starting to learn Torah. Now, he's still a goy at this point. You're usually not allowed to teach a goy Torah, but one thing is, Marshall mentions, and this is actually brought by halacha, when the guy is learning as part of the process of Geirus, which is what's taking place over here, because Hillel intends to teach him what it means to be a Yid and to actually make a proper Geir out of him, then you're allowed to. So he's learning Chumash. Kivinchi Giyah Bahazorah Korah Yomot. He reaches the passage in Parashat Bamidbar that says the stranger that comes close to the Beis Mikdash is going to be put to death. Amalei Mikra Zal Minemar. So the guy asks, what kind of person is this referring to? Who is the Zor in this connection? Amalei. So Hillel answers him. Afilu al David Melech Yisrael. It refers even to somebody as great as David HaMelech. Even David HaMelech, he's not from Shevet Levi, so he's considered a Zor, and he's not allowed to enter the Beis. He's not allowed to enter the parts of the Beis Mikdash that are reserved for Kohen. But now, Nasa Oisei Ger, Kavachomer Ba'asmai. Now this Ger, or this prospective Ger, whatever, made a Kavachomer himself. He realized, Umay Yisrael, Shemikru, Bonim Amokim, Madach, the Jewish people, who are called the children of Hashem. And he knew that already, because that's in Parshas Shemot, and he was already up to Parshas Bamidbar. when we toast Abba Sha'avam, Korolahem Nibah, or actually Bonim Lamar, Bonim Asim, Hashem, I guess it was later, but whatever. When we toast Abba Sha'avam, Korolahem Nibah, Yisrael, and Hashem loved the Jewish people so much that he called them my firstborn son, Yisrael, and yet, yet the Pasuk says that Yisrael, who's not a Kohen or a Levi, is considered a stranger for this purpose, and he gets put to death if he comes close to the places in the Beit Hamikdash where he's not supposed to be. Ger Hakal, so he realized to himself, a Ger who's on a much lower level, Shabbat Makla Yerutamile, one day he walks in with his walking stick and with his knapsack, and saying, I want to join the Jewish people. Allah has time to come, how much more so that I should realize that I'm nowhere near the level of the born Jewish people, and for sure, therefore, how could I ever have thought that I could be a Kohen Gadol? Baalit Nei Shammai, so he comes back to Shammai, and tells him, Amalek, Kvum Roy Ani Bias Kohen Gadol, listen, when I came to you to begin with, saying, I want to be a Kohen Gadol, now I know, am I really able to be Kohen Gadol? Baalik Siba Tereb Azor HaKorev Yomot. So in other words, instead of pushing me away, you should have explained to me to begin with, now look, you know what, even if a Yisrael, a non-Kohen or Levi, is not allowed to be a Kohen Gadol, much less a Ger, if you would explain that to me, then I would have either realized, okay, forget about it, then I don't want to bother, or I would have gone ahead and learned Torah and actually become a Ger for sincere reasons, but why didn't you tell me? Bolish Ne Hillel, then he comes back to Hillel, Omalei, Inverson Hillel, he says, you humble Hillel, your nuchul lecha brachas aroshka, may brachas rest for you on your head, sheikrap tani tachas kanfei ashchina, because you brought me close under the wings of the Shechina, because you taught me what it means to be a Yid, and that I became a proper Yid. The Gemara finishes off the story. L'yomim nizdav u'shloshtan l'makam echad. Eventually, time passed, and these three gerim all met up in one place. And they were all comparing their stories, obviously, and all of them realized that they had the same kind of story, where they first went to Shammai and he kicked them out, and then they went to Hillel and he taught them. Omru, so they said, the strictness of Shammai, where he's particular about the letter of the halacha, that would have removed us from the world. We never would have become Gerim if it had been only for Shammai. In the Sanuse, show Hillel, Kevon, or Tachas Kanfei Shechina. On the other hand, Hillel's humility and his patience with us brought us close under the wings of the Shechina. So that's what we're saying. That's what the Gemara meant at the beginning when we brought the Braita, that a person should always be a humble person like Hillel rather than a captain like Shammai. Now, mind you, we're not saying that what Shammai was doing was completely wrong. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you do have to stand up for the honor of Torah. And that's what Shammai figured he's doing in each of these cases. He didn't realize that these people, that there is a sincerity behind what they're asking, and that you could show them, you could get rid of mistaken notions that they have. For example, that Torah Shabbat Peh isn't important, or that you can reduce all of Torah to one principle or whatever. And then they could actually become sincere Gerim. He just looked at the surface of it. They're a bunch of jokers are coming over here trying to make fun of Yiddishkeit and trying to make fun of Torah and claim as if it's a nothing. And therefore he kicked them out. But these Gerim are saying, okay, that's all fine and good. You do have to stand up for the honor of the Torah. But it's also important to look below the surface and see where sometimes you have a joker like all of us were at the time, and still there is something more behind the joking.
Rabbi, Shammai said, "Have you make a bell call of number 7 in your throat?"
Shammai himself says, "Heaven the Kabbal has called Adam to save upon him Yafis." Thank you. I forgot about that. Yes, Shammai himself doesn't care for everyone. Greet everybody cheerfully. So it's not like, you know, we shouldn't chas v'shalom get the impression that Shammai is some kind of misanthrope or some kind of mean person or whatever. He knew the importance of receiving everybody cheerfully, but he also knew the importance of standing up for the honor of Torah and the honor of Yiddishkeit. And he'll also knew that, but he'll realize that these people, they're not stam jokers or whatever. There is a certain sincerity behind them, which we can dig and we can uncover.
But on the other hand, what I find interesting is that after all, it's after asking Shammai that they went to Hillel. They couldn't accept the Tzadah Gvura, and they needed the Tzadah Chesed. Who says that they would have accepted up front the Tzadah Chesed from Hillel in the first place? Nobody knows.
That's a very fair point, actually. You're right. It could very well be that they needed that. It could very well be that they first needed that rejection from Shammai in order to be more receptive to what Hillel was going to tell them. That's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah. So So the fact of the matter is, you need both. I mean, as you know, as the Alter explains in Tanya, a person has to have both Chesed and Gvura within them, because those are both midos of Hashem, and a person has to have them within themselves. Some people, like the Shammai, tend more towards the side of Gvura. Some people, like Hillel, tend more towards the side of Chesed. But in Kedusha, you have the interdependent Chesed incorporates within Gvura, and Gvura incorporates within Chesed, as we're going to have, you know, later this week, at the end of this week, we're going to start counting Sfira Sodomer, and of course we have Chesed Sheba Chesed, and Gvura Sheba Chesed, and so forth. Yeah, indeed. All right, let's go on.
And I think that's the halacha, isn't it, that a Rav should discourage a future ger? Isn't that the...
It is true also, yes, when a person comes first to be misgayer, you do have to first try to discourage him. That's also true. So yes, then in that case, that's true. So Shammai is discouraging them, may have been what was needed, yes. Okay. All right, getting back to, we mentioned earlier in the Gemara about the concept of Yiras Shamayim. We mentioned earlier on Lamed Omid Beis, we said that the pasuk at the end of Kehela says, Sof Javar HaKol Nishma, Es HaLikim Yirav, Es Mitzvot Shemo, Kizat Hal Adam. So let's talk more now about Yiras Shamayim. What does it mean, a pasuk in Yeshaya? V'hoya Emunas Itecha, the faithfulness of your times will be choisen, strength, Yeshua's saving, chochmas, wisdom, vadas, and understanding, Zomer. And then, so what does that mean? What are those six expressions, and munas, itecha, etc.? They refer to the six dorim of the Mishnah, which encapsulate within them the whole Torah. Emunas, zeseder, Zomer. The word emunas, faithfulness, or trustworthiness, refers to seder, Zomer, Rashi says, because Hashem relies on the trustworthiness of a person, that he's going to be trustworthy and give Maisrus properly. Much of Seder Zroyim talks about the various things that a person has to give from his crops. He has to give Peah, he has to give Truma, Maisrishin, etc. Ultimately, it all depends on the person being reliable in doing that, so therefore that Seder is called a Munas. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi a different meaning, because a farmer trusts in Hashem in order to plant. The farmer doesn't know when he plants whether his crops are going to be successful. He plants and then he trusts in Hashem that his crops are going to be successful. So therefore that seder can be summarized as emunah. Itecha is a seder moed. When it says your times refers to seder moed, because that's what moed is all about, the different special times in the week and during the year. Choisen is a seder noshim. The word choisen, which means strength, refers to, it means strength, but it also means inheritance. So it refers to Seder Noshim. Rashi says, because a person marries and he has children, and that way, and his children eventually inherit from him. There's a few other explanations how it is that Choisen comes to mean Seder Noshim. Marsha says one of them, that Choisen is actually an abbreviation for Chelek Seder Noshim. Okay. Another meaning is also because a wife strengthens her husband. So therefore, so Choisen refers to Seder Noshim. Yeshuais, the Seder Nezikin. The word in the pasuk Yeshuais, saving, refers to Seder Nezikin, because it saves a person from damaging other people's property or from having to owe other people money, etc. So therefore, the Nezikin, the Seder about damages and then owing people money or whatever, can be categorized as Yeshua, as a person is saved from the consequences of such things. Marsha points out, also, you have the Abav, the Nezikin, refer on a deeper level, they hint at the four different Goliaths and whatever, and therefore Yeshua also refers to how Hashem saves us from the four Goliaths. So that's Yeshua. Chochmas, the Seder Kodshim, the word Chochmas, wisdom, refers to Seder Kodshim, which talks all about the Korbanos, which are complicated stuff. And Vadas, and Das, which Rashi explains, is even greater than Chokma, that refers to Seder Taris, which talks about Tumah V'Tara, which is even more complicated than the Korbanos. Okay, so those are the six Dorim. Ba'afilu Hochi, nevertheless, the prophet finishes off, those six Dorim are not the most important thing. Even more important, Yiras Hashem Hi Osorei, the fear of Hashem, that's Hashem's real treasure. In other words, yes, Hashem appreciates that a person learns the six Dorim and learns all the different halachas, but Hashem appreciates and puts in his treasure house even more so the person who has Yiras Shamayim. One thing is we learned before Hakol Bidei Shamayim. We learned in Brachas Hakol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Miyiras Shamayim. Everything that happens in the world is in Hashem's hands, except whether a person is going to fear Hashem or not. So therefore, so to speak, like that's Hashem's special treasure, because like everything else Hashem himself has, and only that Hashem himself, so to speak, doesn't have on his own, and he has to depend on us to provide it. So in this connection, Omar Rabba, so Rabba says, here's another meaning. First of all, here's another thing in which we see that Yiras Shemayim is more important even than learning Torah and the other things that a person needs to accomplish in the world. But also, we're going to talk about the questions that a person is asked in the Beis Din Shamayla, when his neshama goes up after 120, and the questions that he's asked also refer back to these six words from the pasuk that we just mentioned. Amar Rava, b'shar shemachnisin adam ladin, when a person is being brought in for judgment in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, or min loy, then they ask him the following question. Number one, nasasa v'nasasa be'emunah, did you do business honestly? So that represents emunah, as he said. Number two, kabaita itim la Torah, did you set aside 6 times during the day to learn Torah? That's itecha. Number three, a fasting period of Ilya. Did you, during your life, were you involved in Kruavu? And Marashal said, it's not asking the question, which is Choysen, as we said, means children who will inherit. Marashal said, it doesn't necessarily, the question is not, did you actually do accomplish the mitzvah period of Ilya? Because the person is not necessarily in a person's hand. The person can be married for 50 years, and unfortunately, they're not able to have children or whatever, and they don't have a son and a daughter. But when we say a factor, the period of Ilya, Marashal explains, the question is, Did you help poor people and orphans get married? So that way you're involved with peri-veridia of theirs, in other words, by making it possible for them to do peri-veridia. So did you do that? Number four, that's Choysen. Number four, they ask him, Tipisa Yeshua, did you constantly look forward to the Hashem saving of the Jewish people when Hashem is going to bring Mashiach? Did you constantly expect that it's going to be coming? So in other words, that's Yeshua's. Number five, Pilpalta B'chokma, did you do pilpul in wisdom? Pilpul means to delve into and understand the ideas behind it. So did you do that in the wisdom of Torah? That's Chokma. And number six, Tevanta Dover Mitzvah Dover, did you try to understand one thing from another, which is part of learning Torah? In particular, it's what the Gemara itself calls Gemara, or calls Talmud, which is where you delve, which is what we do throughout Shas, which is you're going through a Mishnah, you're going through a Braisa, you're going through whatever, and finding, okay, we learned this din, and based on that, we can derive another din. That's Tevanta Dover Mitzvah Dover. So did you do that? And nevertheless, even if the person is able to answer yes to all six of those questions, if the fear of Hashem is his treasure, meaning if on top of all of that he had Yiras Shemayim, then Ein, and he's in good shape. Eloi, and it's not that he's not in such good shape. Now, why is Yiras Shemayim so important? If he learned Torah and did all the other good things, and why does it matter so much if he doesn't have Yiras Shemayim? Moshe l'odem sh'omer l'shluchay halali kur chitin la'aliyah. It's like a moshe of a person who says to his shliach, bring me up a kur of wheat to the attic of the house, to store away. Holach the halaloi, so the guy goes and brings up the kur of wheat, to store away. Omalei, then the balabas asks him, irav d'liba hen tab chumtin, did you mix into them a tav? Now, a tav to a kur is a very small percentage. It's like 1 out of 180. But a chumtin, which is a sandy soil, which prevents you mix it together with the grain, and it prevents the grain from rotting. So did you mix the tav chumtin before you brought the grain up? Omalei lab. So if the shliach says no, omalei, and the balabas tells him, mutter v'mlei halei, so then it would have been better if you didn't bring it up. Because like this, it's just going to spoil up there. So the same way, yiras shamayim is like the salty soil that preserves the grain, which is the Torah. So if a person has limud haTorah, but they don't have Yiras Shemayim, then their Torah is, so to speak, going to spoil. It's not going to last long term. So this is where we have the concept of the importance of learning Chassidus, because that's what Chassidus is all about. It's to develop Avat Hashem, and in particular, Yiras Hashem. So therefore, that's the importance of setting aside time from the day to learn Chassidus. It's brought, actually, in that connection, that the famous Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, the one who founded the Volozhiner Yeshiva, he one time asked the Alter Rebbe, so he says, okay, but based on all Gemara over here, you're saying you need one kav of chumtin in a kur of wheat, so therefore, that means, okay, so you need one 180. Well, 180th of a day, there are 24 hours in a day, or 1,440 minutes. If you divide that by 180, it would mean that you need about 8 minutes for learning considerates, 8 minutes in every 24 hours. So why is it that you're spending so much more time on learning considerates at the expense of Migla? And the Altadeva answers him, because he doesn't just say in the Gemara here that you need the Kav Chumtin. It says you need to mix in the Kav Chumtin. Mixing it takes longer. In other words, the idea is it's not just enough to rattle off a Maimel Chassidus and say, okay, I've learned Chassidus. You have to actually get it mixed in and then get it to actually affect your Metzius and affect your personality. Okay, so in this connection, the Gemara says, Tonad Ve'er Rabbi Shmuel, we learn in a Braisa of the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, Ma'arav Adam Kav Chumtin Mekur Shal Tvua, suppose a person is selling a quart of grain, he's allowed to begin with mix in that Kav of Chumtin and sell the whole thing as a quart of grain, even though actually only 179 parts of it are grain and one part of it is Chumtin. There's no problem with it to sell it at the full value of a full quart of wheat. Because again, that's what you need in order to preserve the wheat and prevent it from spoiling. So therefore, it's considered an essential part of the wheat, and therefore you can't say, the guy can't later say, wait, you cheated me, you sold me, I paid you for a quart of wheat, and you gave me less than a quart and the rest, and one calf of it is chumtin. He has no claim because the chumtin are important there to prevent the wheat from spoiling. Okay. Continuing on this topic of Torah and Yiras Shamayim, Amar Rava Bar Abuna, Kol Adam Sheyesh by Torah v'ein by Yiras Shamayim, a person who has Torah but does not have Yiras Shamayim, Doma, he resembles with Gizbar like a treasurer from Mosul and Makkechas Apnimius, where they gave him the keys for the inner chambers, or Makkechas Achisonis by Mosul, but they didn't give him the keys to the outer chambers. Say, hey, Ayo, how am I supposed to get in? What good do the keys to the inner chambers do if he can't first get into the outer chamber? So the nimshal is, in other words, that Yira is a prerequisite for learning Torah. So if a person doesn't have Yira and he only has Torah, then it's like as if he only has the keys to the inside and not to the outside. So Rashi explains, if he's a Yorei Shamayim, then when he learns Torah, he's going to be careful. Okay, I learned something. Now I need to be careful to follow what I just learned, to follow the halacha I just learned. If he doesn't have a Yorei Shamayim, then he doesn't care. Okay, I learned Torah, but I just learned it as an interesting topic, as a science or something, rather than in order to actually follow and listen to what Hashem wants. The Gemara says similarly, Machriz Rabbi Yanai made an announcement in this connection about the importance of Yiras Shamayim together with Torah. Chaval al the Lesley Darja, what a pity about the person who doesn't have a yard, who doesn't have a front yard, the Tara la Darja of it, and then he makes a door for that non-existent yard. In other words, here the metaphor is the opposite. Here the metaphor is that the Torah is like the gate through which you come into the yard of Yiras Shamayim. So if a person has Torah without the yard, without Yiras Shamayim, then it's like having a gate without a yard. So we're having, on the one hand, we're saying that we're comparing Yiras Shamayim to the outer chamber and Torah to the inner one in the first metaphor. On the other hand, now we're saying it's the other way around, that Torah is an entrance in. So the Altadeva explains in Tanya, and briefly in Perek Chof Gimel of Tanya, and in more detail in a couple of different Maimorim in the Kotei Torah, that there's two different levels of Yira. There's a lower level of Yira, which actually we have in Tanya these days. The Altadeva is talking about the importance of a person has to have Yira and Abba for their mitzvahs in order to fly up the Shemayim. So there's a lower level Yira that a person has to have as a prerequisite for learning Torah. That's the first metaphor where we're saying that Yira is like the outer key, is like the key to the outer chambers. Then on the other hand, you have a higher level of Yira, which the Altadeva talked about briefly in Perek Chof Gimel of Tanya, that where the person realizes that everything in the world is bottled to Elikos. That's a much higher level of Yira. That kind of thing, a person reaches that level of Yira as a result of learning Torah. So there it's the other way around. Like Torah, therefore, is the entranceway to go into that yard of that higher level of Yira. Okay. Going on, the Gemara continues, Amr of Yehuda, Lo'i Baruch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Esa Lame, Ela Kadeshi Yidu Milafanav. Hashem created the whole world only in order that people should fear him. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ve'alas, V'haylekim, Oseshi Yidu Milafanav. Hashem made it that people should fear him. In other words, the meaning is Hashem made the whole world in order that there should be people who have Yiras Shamayim. So another story in this connection, Reb Simon and Reb Elazar Havu Yasbi, Reb Simon and Reb Elazar one time were sitting together, Cholos Ba'azar Reb Yaakov Ba'acha, Reb Yaakov Ba'acha passed by, So one of them said, Omelech Chab L'Chab, right? So Reb Simon and Reb Elazar, one of them says to the other one, we're not sure which one is which, we're going to see soon, but one of them says to the other, Neiku Mikamei, let's stand up in his honor, Gigvar Dochu Chatorinu, because he is a person who is a Yore Shemayim, he's a person who fears Avera, and that's a very high level, so we should stand up in his honor. Omelech Idoch, the other one says, Neiku Mikamei, Gigvar Bar Urinu, let's stand up in his honor because he's a Ben Torah, because he's learned Torah. Amalei, the first one says, I'm telling you the greater advantage that he's a Yorei Shemayim, you're saying the lower level thing that he's only a Ben Torah, being a Yorei Chet is a much higher thing than being a Ben Torah. So that's what we should be honoring him, and that's what we should be standing up for him for. So the question is, which one said which? We had Reb Simon and Reb Elazar. Which one between them holds that Yiras Shemayim is greater? Kisayim, we can conclude that Reb Elazar, who the Omer Degvar Docho Chatorinu, we can conclude that Reb Elazar is the first one who said we should stand up because of him, because he's a Yiras Shemayim, because we find Reb Elazar saying a similar thing, that the most important thing in the world is Yiras Shemayim. The Amr Rav Yechanan Meshum Rav Elazar, namely Rav Yechanan says in the name of Rav Elazar, which is a little bit backwards actually, because usually Rav Elazar is a Talmud of Rav Yechanan, but okay, anyway, on the side of it, he was bringing the Giras to Rav Elazar, but Rav Shimon, but okay. Ein loy laKadosh Baruch Hu ba'ulamai ela Yiras Shemayim bilvad. Hashem has, the only important thing Hashem has in the world is Yiras Shemayim. Shenema ba'aki Yisrael ma Hashem al-Tech HaShayom Imach, as the Pasuk says, now Yisrael, what is Hashem your God asking from you? Ki'im l'yirav, but not only to fear Hashem. So we see that to fear Hashem is a very precious thing that Hashem is asking us for. Uchtip, so again, the conversation before Rav Elazar, therefore, must have been the one who insisted because Rav Yaakov ba'achav is a Yorei Shemayim, that's much more important than anything else. And you have another passage that shows the importance of Yiras Shemayim, how important it is to Hashem, how it's the one unique thing for Hashem. Uchtiv, you have a passage in Iyov, Vayomer lo'odom, he, meaning Hashem, said to the person, Hein Yiras Hashem hi chokhmah v'gomer, behold, the fear of Hashem is chokhmah, and the word Hein means one, shekein v'loshin yivani, koren l'achat Hein, because in Greek, the word for one is Hein. So therefore, in other words, we can understand the passage as saying, Vayomer lo'odom, Hein Yiras Hashem hi chokhmah, the one special thing is Yiras Hashem, which is chokhmah. So therefore, Kisayim, therefore we can conclude from that in fact, we can prove that Reb Elazar is the one who said that Yiras Shemayim is more important than learning Torah. Okay. So now we're done with Agadja for now. We're going to have more Agadja tomorrow.
So what do we say? Talmud Torah, can I get Kulam then?
That's as far as other mitzvahs. Yira is not Yira. I mean, there is a mitzvah of Yira, but the altogether explains. You have a Yira, which is one of the individual mitzvahs, one out of 613. Regarding that, Talmud Torah is connected all the other mitzvahs. But then you have a kind of Yira. You have the kind of Yira and Abba, for that matter, that are a prerequisite for all the mitzvahs. Any mitzvah, the altogether is explaining in Tanya these days, Shir Tanya and Chitas, that you have to have, your mitzvahs have to be activated by Yira and Ava in order for them to be real mitzvahs, in order for them to go up to Shemayim. So that kind of Yira, we're saying over here, is more important even than learning Torah. It's a prerequisite for learning Torah and for doing mitzvahs properly. Okay. So now we're going to, actually we're not done with the Agadah yet. We have one more. Dorash Rav Ula. Rav Ula gave a drasha as follows. Now, we mentioned earlier in the Agadah, earlier in the Sugya, that the Chachamim originally had a problem with Sefer Kehelas, because there seemed to be things in Sefer Kehelas that contradict each other, and therefore the Chachamim wanted to hide it away until they discovered that not. They discovered it has a beginning and end of Divrei Torah, and therefore it's fine. So here's another example where we have something in Kehelas that on the face of it doesn't seem to make sense. What does it mean? A pasuk in Kehelas that says don't be a rosha a lot. So what does that mean? What does that mean? So you can't be a big rosha, but you can be a little rosha. What does that mean? No. So Ella, what does the pasuk mean? It means like this. It's like a metaphor. We learned this metaphor in brachas as well. Suppose a person ate garlic and their breath smells bad. should he go and eat more garlic and his breath will smell again, and his breath will smell worse? In other words, what the Pasuk is saying is, even if you tripped up and did an Aveira, don't continue to be a Rasha. Just like if you ate garlic, okay, you can't help it. You already ate it. Your breath smells bad, but at least don't eat it anymore. Don't make things even worse. So the same thing, a person did an Aveira, okay, you have to do Tshuva on it. Don't compound it. Don't make it worse by being even more of a Rasha. Okay. Darash Rava Barav Ula. Rava Barav Ula gave another Darasha. My dechtiv ki ein chartubres l'moysa muvori ulam. What does it mean? A pasuk in Tilim. Yav kapitul ayin gimel of Tilim is also talking about the problem. Why is it that we have the shoyim that are successful in this world? Which is, of course, a problem, as we learned in Brachas, even Moshe Rabbeinu was bothered by it. It's a problem that we have in all generations. So he uses an expression, a pasuk, ki ein chartubres l'moysam. There is no chartubres for their death, and we'll explain in a second what chatzubos are, uvori ulam, and they are healthy ulam. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like, Mephoshim explains, chatzubos means bonds, like being tied up. So like when they die, they're not tied up, they die very comfortably and peacefully. Uvori ulam, and their strength is very healthy. So in other words, they die very comfortably. But the Gemara is doubting the pasuk. The Gemara is going to doubt the word chatzubos and the word ulam. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu means Hashem is saying, Loi Dayan Murashoyim. It's not bad enough about the Rashoyim. She'enen Charedin Va'asevin Miyem Amitza. They're not trembling and upset about the day that they're going to die. Chautzubos, in other words, we're saying, Chautzubos stands for Charedin Va'asevin. So Marashah explains, in other words, there should be both. By right, the person should be that he's worried about what am I going to do after 120? Do I have enough mitzvahs to go, and you know, enough Torah and mitzvahs to go to Gan Eden? And number two, he should be osev. He should have a certain sadness over the averus he already did and do tshuva about them. The Rishonim don't do either one of those. Ela shalivam bori lahem kolam. Their heart is as healthy and as strong for them as the ulam of the heichal, for example, or any ulam, any entranceway, which has a big, wide entrance, the same way they feel very wide and comfortable. Behind the Omer Rabba, this is like what Rabba said, my dichtiv, what does it mean, another pasuk can tell him, zed darkam ketel lomai, the pasuk says, this is their way, ketel, for them. So what does that mean? Yodim ketel literally means foolishness, but it also means the sides of the body. It also means, actually, ketel also means advice. Means Yodin Rishoyim should die from the Mitha. The Rishoyim know that eventually they're going to die. Everybody knows eventually they're going to die. But yet, that doesn't make them do tshuva. The Yeshlahem Chelev Al Kislam. Yet they have fat on their kidneys, which the kidneys, as we learned in Brachas, give advice. In other words, the idea is like their kidneys. In other words, they should have something within them, their conscience, that gives them advice and tells them what to do and what not to do. But like it's covered up with fat. And therefore, they don't end up doing tshuva. They think that they're always going to be comfortable. Shema toma shecha himehen. So you might say, okay, well, it's not their fault. They forget that they're going to die eventually. But no, Talmud Maimon v'achrein b'firin b'fihen yutzusela. No, the pasuk continues. Their end achrehem like achrisam. Their end b'fihen with their mouth. Yusu, they will tell over, sell off forever. In other words, they know very well they're going to die, and they're always talking about this and this and this is going to happen after I die. And yet, that doesn't make them put two and two together and say, therefore, I better do tshuva. I better take off some of that fat from my kidneys and then become more sensitive to do tshuva and to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. They don't realize that. So therefore, the pasuk is criticizing them for that. Now getting back to, we're done with Agadka for now. Again, we'll have more tomorrow, Beis Hashem, but now let's get back to the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah, Kachosal Anerchola, we had in the Mishnah, again, in the ratio of the Mishnah we had, that if the person puts out the candle on Shabbos because, for example, he's in danger because of Goyim or robbers, or because of the sick person, then he's potter. And we said, actually, if the sick person is a chola sheyeshbo sakana, then it's not that he's actually, his life is in danger. It's not only potter, it's even mutter. He's allowed to do it on Shabbos, and that's what brought us into the whole agadja of extinguishing a flame on Shabbos for the sake of a sick person, and that brought us into the whole discussion of agadja beginning on Daf Lamed. Then we said in the Mishnah, on the other hand, if he puts out the candle because he wants to save the lamp from breaking, for example, or because he wants to save the oil, he wants to save the wick, then he's chayev, because he did do a malacha. And then he said, Rabbi Yossi said that no, if he did it because he wants to save the lamp or the wick. Sorry, if he did it because he wants to save the lamp or the oil, then he would actually be potter. But if he did it because he wants to save the wick, then he would be chayim. So the because the Mishnah said the Peshu always a pecham because then he's making charcoal. So the question is, Rabbi Yossi commands Svirle. Now we talked about before about machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about malacha shein atzricha legufa. When a person does one of the 39 malachas, but he's doing it not legufa, which again we said that Tosfos says that means he's not doing it for the exact purpose that it was done in the Mishkan, and Rashi says and other Rishonim say in a somewhat different way that he's doing it like for a negative purpose rather than a positive purpose. So we said Rabbi Yehuda would say he's still chayev. Rabbi Shimon would say it is also to do, but it is potter. So which opinion is Rabbi Yehuda following? Rabbi Yehuda commands Svirle. Which opinion is Rabbi Yehuda following? He could have Yehuda Svirle. If he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, Malach Hashem Esrucha Legufa is Chayev, Afilu Bahanach Nami L'Chayev, then he should be Chayev, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in all three cases, whether he was doing it to save the lamp, the oil, or the wick, all three of them are Malach Hashem Esrucha Legufa, Rabbi Yehuda would hold he's Chayev, therefore he should be Chayev. The E could have Shimon Svirle, and if we're going to say that Rabbi Yossi holds like Rabbi Shimon, that Malach Hashem and Svirle Gufa is Potter, still a Nami Lister, then he should be Potter, even if he put out in order to save the wick, because we're assuming at this point that the wick has already been lit many times before, so therefore he's not really accomplishing anything new, he's not really making any new charcoal or whatever by putting out the wick now, so according to Rabbi Shimon, why would he be Chayav? The answer is, Amar Ula, lo olam ki Rabbi Yehuda Svirle. So Ula says, the answer is, Rabbi Yossi actually does hold like Rabbi Yehuda, so therefore he would hold, Malach Hashem Esrucha Legufa is Chayev, so why does he argue when it comes to the lamp or the oil? Because Sovereign Rabbi Yossi, Soser, Amar Nas Livnes, Bimakoyma, he had a Soser. Because Rabbi Yossi holds like this. We have there's a Malacha of Soser, there's a Malacha of tearing down, and you have, similarly, there's a couple of the Malachas that involve destroying something. But we're going to learn later in the Masechta, it's not considered a malacha if you're doing it purely for a destructive purpose. It's only if you're doing it for a constructive purpose. For example, you're tearing down a building in order to build a new one. And the same thing, let's say, putting out a flame in order that later on you're going to use the charcoal to make a new one. Rabbi Yossi would hold, only if you're tearing down a building or doing one of these other malachas in order to build a new one in the exact same place, that would be Havi Soiser, that would be the malacha of Soiser, but Amanas Livnes, Shaloi B'Makoyme, Loi Havi Soiser. But Rabbi Yossi would hold that if you're tearing down a building in one place in order to then take the materials and build it someplace else, he holds that would not be the malacha of Soiser. So therefore, in applying that to our case over here, if he puts out the lamp because he wants to save the lamp itself, the clay container, that would be later on when he's going to light in that same container. That's he's planning to light in the same place. Therefore, what it is like this. Sorry. Where are you actually lighting? When you light a lamp, what are you actually lighting the wick? So Rabbi Yossi would say like this, if you're putting out the lamp in order to save the lamp, in other words, you don't care about the oil and the wick, let's say, you're planning to throw out the rest of the oil and the rest of the wick. And later on, when you want to relight it, you're going to get new oil and a new wick. Well, therefore, it amounts to you put out the wick now in order to put in a new wick later and light it. And Rabbi Yossi would say that's the equivalent of tearing down a building over here in order to build a building someplace else. That, he says, would not be the malacha of Soser. That would just be mechalkal. That would just be damaging. And that's not considered a malacha. And the same thing with the oil. On the other hand, the wick is what you actually light with. So if he actually puts out the wick, then what is he doing? He's putting it out because he wants to save the wick. Then it means he's putting it out because he actually plans to reuse this same wick. Well, in that case, that would be the equivalent of tearing down a building in order to rebuild it in the exact same location. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi would say it's high. Okay, so that would be Rabbi Yossi's reason. So basically, he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. You are chayav from malacha shein tzricha legufa, but he says there is a difference among malachas, whether it's one of the constructive malachas or whether it's one of the destructive malachas. Mechabah, putting out a fire, is one of the malachas that ordinarily could be a destructive act. Because usually you would have, let's say you're putting out a fire, and that's that. Now you don't have a fire anymore. It's a destructive act. Then everybody would agree you're potter, because that's mekalkel. Rabbi Yossi says, only if you're planning to relight it using the same wick, only then would we say that to begin with, it was a constructive act. Otherwise, we would say the fact that you're throwing out the old wick and putting in a new one means that the original thing was destructive, and therefore you're potter. Amalei Rabba, so Rabba asks Ulla, if you're going to say that according to Rav Yossi, when you tear down a building in order to build it someplace else, then it's not considered a malacha, Mechti, so let's consider. Kol malachas yalfin lehu mimishkan. We know that the whole definition of all the 39 malachas we learned from the Mishkan, now what do they do with the Mishkan? They tore down the Mishkan in one place, and then they move to another place in the desert, and then they put it back up over there. So that's Sotir, and that's Sotir in order to build it in another place. And we still say that Sotir is a malacha, but obviously, therefore, it must be a malacha even if it's in a different place. Amalei, so Ulla tells him, Shiny Hossam, it's different in that case. Kivin Dichtiva, Pi Hashem Yachnu, since the Pasuk says that everywhere they camped was by the word of Hashem, to Sotir, and ask witness, and claim a dummy, then it's the equivalent of tearing down in order to build in the same place. The fact that physically it's a different place doesn't matter because it's the same place in the sense that each time it's a place that Hashem told them to camp. And therefore it can be considered as if it was in the same place. I saw somebody gave an interesting metaphor for it. Like if you have, for example, you know, a person, an adult, let's say, is one day in New York and the next day they fly to California, let's say. So you would say, today they're in New York, tomorrow they're in California. But if, let's say, you have a baby is being carried by its mother, and she takes the baby on the plane, so you wouldn't say the baby was today in New York and tomorrow and the next day is in California. Yesterday he was in his mother's arms. Today he's in his mother's arms. So the same way, when Hashem tells us where to camp, then we're effectively still in the same place. Okay. So that's one explanation of Rav Yossi in our Mishnah, is that he agrees with Rav Yehuda, but he says there's a difference between the different malachas. There's a difference between the malachas that inherently can be destructive, where it would have to be that you're doing it in order to rebuild or redo in the exact same place. But Rav Yochanan says, no, actually Rav Yossi in our Mishnah agrees with Rav Shimon. So then in that case, Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa usually would be Potter. So that explains why he's Potter if he's putting out the lamp because he wants to save the container or the oil, because that's not the purpose for which they did it in the Mishkan, and it's not a constructive purpose. As Rashi says, he would rather not have had the lamp lit in the first place and not have to put it out. But why is it different when he's putting out in order to save the wick? The reason is, because the Amr of Hamnuna, the reason is, based on what Rav Hamnuna said, the Itamer of Adar B'Av, or some say of Adar B'Av, said, we're not talking about, like we thought all this time, that we're talking about a wick that's previously been lit and then put out. We're talking about a wick that's being lit for the first time, where he needs to singe it, he needs to make it that next time it'll light easier. Divahi, after the Rav Shimon Maiden. There, Rav Shimon is going to agree that that first time he's putting it out, he's going to be chayev to come a sack and mana, because now he's making it into a usable cave. Beforehand, before he lit it, it wasn't fully usable because it wouldn't fit, because it wouldn't light that easily. Now, when he lights it and then he puts it out, we're then, as we said the other day, as far as preparing the Shabbos candles, now next time it'll be easier to light. So that's he's making a keli, and even Rav Shimon would agree he's chayev for that. Omer Rabba, Dekanami. So Rabba said, actually, you can see that from the clear wording of the Mishnah. Dekatani shehu oisa pecham. Because the expression in the Mishnah is, Rabbi Yossi is saying that he's chayev because he is making charcoal, implying that we're talking about that right now he's making it new charcoal, which it wasn't before. But like Katani with Mishnah, nasif pecham. The expression is not in the Mishnah in past tense, that it was charcoal, which then it would mean that it was previously lit and then put out, and now he's lighting it again and then putting it out. That's not the situation. We're saying that it's the first time he's lighting it and then putting it out. Now, for the first time, he's going to be making it charcoal. So good, Shmamina, that proves that that's what Rav Yossi's reason in the Mishnah is, because in that case, he's actually doing the malacha of making charcoal, which is a constructive thing. Now he makes it the next time it'll light more easily. It's a constructive purpose. If the purpose, if the exact purpose for which they put out fires in the Mishkan was in order to make charcoal, and therefore even Rav Shimon would agree that that is also, because it is, not just also, but that is chayim, because it is malacha shetzricha legufa.